Hi, and welcome to episode 54 of Fully Boosted, a War Machine Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Grant.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Brad.
I'm Pete.
And today, we welcome back our good friend from up north, the pleasure, the honor to have Mr. Tim Banky on, the legend himself.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
Is that good enough? I wanted Tim to talk like he was one of the guys, and everyone yelled at me and made me redo it to introduce him. So
I still feel welcome, Grant. But your listeners probably don't know me because I've only been on once before.
No,
I mean twice. I mean everybody knows who you are. So
no, you've been on twice.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry.
As a former listener,
I was like, I thought for sure it was more than once.
It was on before the Sioux, and then do we have him on?
Yeah, it was like before the Sioux, Ghost Fleet Tech, and then there might have been.
Oh yeah, the Ghost Fleet. Yes,
yeah, the Ghost Fleet episode. You know, the episode that basically has more hits than the rest of all the episodes put together.
That's right.
See if we can beat it, guys.
You did.
Yeah, there you go.
We did it here first.
I'm glad we could introduce the world to Tim Banky.
Yeah, nobody knows who he is, so we just.
It was before us. He was a nobody.
That's true. We made you.
That's correct.
just some Canadian.
I mean, what even is Canada, right?
Just some guy that likes to quote himself incorrectly.
Oh, you know, man, a dude.
Oh God, a dude. Tim, who is fresh off second place at Nova, so Tim, congrats on that.
Thank you.
I know somebody of your caliber, second place, is kind of like, you know, you're having such a good year. Second place is like, I feel like I'm insulting you. I don't know. I'm not sure how to approach it.
Not even a little bit. Second place is still a huge achievement. This time last year, that would have been the best I'd ever done at a major event like that. So I've had a really great year, and I'm just grateful for it.
Yes, and it was to JVM, which I think you said, what's your record against him, McNeil?
We are now 1-1, but in all of my time judging, and I have the most judge hours credited as a volunteer in the program, and Jake is maybe my favorite player to judge because I think he plays the elements of the game that I know well as the most important elements of the game, the best of anyone I've ever been a table judge for.
Yeah, which is that's great. That's
and he's pretty cute, right?
I wouldn't want to step on any Zosha toes here.
No.
I was going to say, it gets dangerous.
Yeah,
the man does even lift, though.
I'll call Jake cute. I don't care. Tell Zosha.
But is he the nicest and cutest? That's the question.
No, not the nicest and cutest. Still goes to Nate.
Yeah, definitely goes to Nate.
And then taking third there was our buddy Mike Ireland.
Mike Ireland, excuse me.
How dare I speak his name without his formal?
He needs to start putting that on his score sheet so it actually shows up
in his
listings.
He does. Yeah.
Well, they have his name wrong then.
Yeah. And Tim, you said you had played Mike.
Mike and I played in the Champions event, and I played Grimkin and lost quite handily to him. He was playing his Alara list, and then we got a rematch, this time with me playing the Ghost Fleet in the semifinals of Masters, and it was a really excellent game. Really intense game, very, very back and forth. One of the wins I'm more proud of for how hard I had to work for it.
Yeah, we were, and Brad, you guys were all there. Ryan and I weren't. I was literally hitting refresh on my Gmail account because Harrison and Klinger and everybody was giving us like play-by-play updates.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't update for like 3 minutes.
Yeah,
I like sat tableside and gave no updates.
Yeah.
That basement was a Wi-Fi dead zone. So, like, props to Harrison to be able to smuggle a message out.
Every time I go to the washroom, I get like 50 notifications.
I didn't know it was that bad.
Oh, that's it was terrible.
So that's rough then if you're using War Room. Does that crush your battery even quicker?
The hall was very nice, except you just didn't have internet service.
Yeah, I turned my phone into airplane mode, so it wasn't constantly searching for a signal.
Gotcha.
So what are we doing today, boys?
So, Tim, obviously you're prepping. You have WTC, I guess, next week you leave? Or
So I fly out to Kamloops for AttackX tomorrow. It'll be Thursday. And then I'm in Kamloops for a weekend to play at the last con before the WTC. And then I come back into Ontario for a day, do laundry, go to work, get on a flight again, and fly to Belgium.
Ooh.
Busy week.
Yeah, should be. I'm excited. I think our team is ready. I'm really, really happy with the group of guys that I've got and the amount of work that they've put in. I mean, we've been working really, really hard on this since January, and I've got a good team. I'm not afraid to admit that I think going into this, we're very, very prepared for the event.
What a homer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's your schedule
so
like?
So if you had to pick, would you go Team Canada?
Of course you're going Team Canada. What kind of fucking stupid question, Zach Grant?
That was.
Tim, you think you're going to lose? Like, you think your team's going to shit the bed?
You think your team's garbage? No.
How else do you want to answer that?
So, like, cards on the table, like any big tournament, there's always a huge element of luck. You know, if we just get a really bad matchup really early, like, that could change the outcome of the entire weekend. You know, dice shit the bed, and what was otherwise a guarantee, you lose that game. I mean, a million things that could happen, like, I get food poisoning and lose 6 rounds. Like, those things happen, and they've been known to happen before. So you never walk into a tournament assuming anything. But I know that with the little bit of luck that we need, and with the lot of preparation we put in, my team is in a position to do extremely well this year. And I'm proud of them no matter what, because these guys they've poured enormous amounts of time into it. They've made big personal sacrifices in terms of their own free time. I mean, in most cases, they've doubled or tripled the amount of weekly gaming that they're doing to get ready for this event. And that started in January.
Yeah, that's a long time of a lot of games. So, yeah. And as anyone trying to get games in, even casually, like that's a lifestyle change almost for the time that you're doing that.
It totally is. I've attended twice as many conventions this year as I have in years previous. I've had the best personal achievements, like in terms of my own record. Same with the number of members of my team. Like, we're hungry for it. We really want it. I mean, this is a group of guys who are really, really ambitious, and with a few exceptions, no one else on this team has attended the WTC representing Canada before. So we're here ready to prove our place.
So
awesome.
So Tim,
awesome.
If I can ask.
The mental game's half the going into it's half the fight.
In some cases, more than half.
Yeah. That's true, yes. Yeah. In some cases, more than half.
I've had to psych myself up a little bit. But tonight, we're going to talk about lists, right?
And that's fun. Yeah, that was why I don't know. I guess it was Brad or you guys were talking or whatever, and the idea came up to have you on again and talk some lists about some cool, interesting things now that there's been some time to digest the massive amount of lists. And I can't believe, but I actually spent the last 2 days at work reading through every single one. I did not digest 90% of it.
Okay, I was going to say.
But I've looked at every single WTC list, and, you know. Whatever, it doesn't mean anything for me. But before we got into the...
Grandma's teaching himself how to read with WTC lists. He was sounding out words.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so all I needed to really read was Revenant Crew. That was pretty much it.
There's some Revenant Crew there, but there's also, like, I mean, there's some really neat lists. Poland always brings some crazy stuff. I mean, you see a lot of guys out there who have lists where you're like, what is that about? And there's been a lot of instances where our team has sat down and said, like, why are they doing that? Like, these are the best players in their countries. I mean, in some cases, there's financial barriers for attending the event, and who knows how good Florida guy is. But, like, these are people who work really, really hard and have been chosen among the best representatives of their country to come. So they know what they're doing. They can play pretty good War Machine. Like, Canada's got a population of 33 million, and we can put together 15 really decent players. There's countries here who have way more people in them, and they're still putting together really, really excellent teams of some of the best players who are there. So, like, nobody's going without a plan, and it's up to us to kind of figure out what those plans are.
So, real quick, before we jump in, I did look through some of the stats, and if anyone's looked at them, just don't answer, but I wanted to do something really cute and funny, or fun, not funny. I got a top five of the most played models/units in WTC. Not most played, most selected.
Most selected model/units.
So keeping in mind that Krix was played 53 times, Signar 52, and Kador 36.
So I was about to ask, is it most times per faction we represent, or just most times?
Just most in general. Most times selected, but keeping in mind.
Are you including casters?
No, this is model unit, just not caster. Keeping in mind, again, that the top four are Krix, Signar, Kador, and Red.
Can I make one guess right off the bat?
You can.
Death Ripper.
You would be absolutely correct. The Death Ripper is the most chosen model at 155 times.
Oh, I haven't looked at these stats.
That's more of a condemnation on Krix heavies than an endorsement of the Death Ripper.
Does anybody else want to venture a guess? Pete?
Let's see. Top five. I'm going to say Firefly. He's got to be up there.
He was, but not in the top five. He was about 100. I have them in front of me, but he was not in the top five. But he was close.
Gotcha.
Hmm. It was 109 times on
is
the
this fight. Like Family Feud? Like, we have, like, that's our first strike? There's five
things. Oh, no,
yeah,
I
keep
just,
going,
no.
Keep going.
Yeah, yeah, fine. You get three strikes.
You get
out.
Three strikes?
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, you're next up in the family.
Oh, man. how about a Rocketeer?
Good answer,
no.
Good answer.
No.
Good answer. No, no Rocketeer.
Oh.
Tim, you got to save us, or the other family gets a steal.
I'm going to go back to Crix and say Revenant Crew of the Atramedes Men.
Yeah, you're right. 135 times. They are tied with another one. And I'll give you a hint.
No hints. I don't need it.
You don't even want to know what faction everything else is from?
Okay, sure. I'll take that.
Okay. There's one from Rhett, one more from Crix, one from Signar, and one from Kador.
Okay, that would make
there was
six
a, there
things.
There's a tie. There's a tie for a second.
So
six things on the board.
All right, hold on. We're gonna confer now because
one from Rhett. It's got to be an Arcanist, right?
Yeah, Arcanist.
Oh, yeah.
Arcanist.
That would be correct. They were tied for the second with the Revenant crew.
Oh, I'm killed. I got the both two on top of this list. Killing it.
Boom.
Killing it.
Can I say Chargers?
Yep, 131 times.
Yep.
More Chargers than Fireflies. That's exciting.
Yep. Ryan, Pete, if you guys want to join the team of Banky and I so far, feel free to jump in.
Wow.
One
I jumped in and was
be,
wrong.
One should be more, a little more obvious than the other. I will say. I gave you the popular factions. I mean, all right, so we haven't hit Kador yet, so what would you think?
Well,
Juggernaut.
That's what I...
No.
Nope.
No. The Marauder, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to be the Marauder if it's only one model, I guess.
And the last one is from Crix.
I'm surprised, though, with the rockets
Crix.
Being 6 to 12
Tim,
rockets
thinking,
a team.
Thinking Pistol Wraith?
I was going to say Stalker because of the death.
Oh, yeah, definitely Stalker. What am I thinking?
Yep. 118.
Hmm.
I just thought
it's a lot of Stalkers.
It's a lot, right? I thought that when I first started going over that, I was like, man, that's a lot of those things, and I think that's really, really cool. So I thought we would do something with that.
I think the Crix thing is because you often have these complementary battle groups that include two Death Rippers, two Stalkers, and some casters are going to want to triple down on the node. Some casters are going to want to put a heavy in place of the two Stalkers, but like pretty universally, like every time I was building a Crix list, I was like, Stalker character jack ? And then eventually that became Death Ripper Death Ripper character jack, and then eventually it became Death Ripper Death Ripper Stalker for the 28 point casters. I can't figure out Terminus. I just don't know. I really, really want Barathrum. I think he's amazingly costed and really, really aggressive, and I just can't fit him into any tight battle group point allocation for Terminus.
And I mean, keep in mind with the Crix stuff, like Crix was taken 53 times, so there's 106 Crix lists, right? So
yeah.
I mean, you know, that obviously skews a little.
That's,
but I just thought
that's
it was
about one Stalker per player.
Yes.
I think it's two Stalkers per one player.
Oh, yeah, two Stalkers per player.
Oh, yeah, because it's,
stalker
yes,
per
you're
list.
Correct. One per list, yes.
They're on rations.
some Scar players are borrowing all the Stalkers.
Well, there's that guy at Nova that had a Scar 1 with 7 Stalkers.
I played against him.
Yeah, it seems kind of bonkers.
You know what's really good against Stalkers?
I'm going to guess the child.
Gremlin Swarms.
Oh, or that.
Oh, God.
I'm like, does 6 to the movement system. Does 6 to the movement. Oh, cool, I can hit the Stalker now.
That seems rough.
Yeah, also the child just it can't be assassinated. She's just invincible.
Didn't he get 3 feated on Stalkers onto the child?
He did. One of them got retaliatory struck, but the rest of them were fine.
And the child lived?
Oh, for sure. She lived with the transfer available.
Yeah, she's hard to kill.
So, real quick, while you guys were discussing Tim's venture to WTC, my microphone was muted. So, I had a question. What's the schedule like for when you get there? Is it you land, get drunk, wake up the next day and play? Or is there, like, some social time? Are you going to take a little bit of vacation?
Our schedule, for me and a number of the other Canadians, is we're landing on... We fly out Tuesday night, we land Wednesday morning because we lose a day on the time exchange. Wednesday we're gonna get situated, kind of bum around. We're landing in
Amsterdam.
No, in Belgium, Brussels. Brussels. Thank
you. You were close, Grant.
Took me a minute.
I tried, guys.
Classic American geography knowledge.
Yeah.
Europe is just one giant country, right?
Yep, basically.
No, well, here's why I said that, because I talked to Mike and he said they were going into Amsterdam meeting up with some Canadians and Americans and they were going to hang out there and then go over. So I thought maybe Tim was part of that. So
I had a little bit of knowledge. The assumption.
I didn't just be an asshole and say I don't know anything. I'm going to say Amsterdam.
And yet you just were an asshole.
So.
Did he mean Antwerp?
I don't know.
Never mind.
It's Mike.
Mike is also American, so he might not know where he's going.
Oh, God. In Belgium, we're going to spend a little bit of time there. I think there's a pub meetup with some of the Swedish players and some of the Irish players. We're going to do some drinking Wednesday, probably do some more drinking on Thursday. Do a little bit of touristy shit, but mostly just kind of decompress and get rid of the jet lag. Then on Friday, we are heading to the venue, which is not there. It's in a different city. There's a train that we have to take and then a shuttle. And then we'll be situated on Friday night. We're planning to try to do like a Canada versus America kind of fun hangout feature match type experience to kind of shake the rust off and get used to it. And then, you know, dinner and drinks and getting to sleep. And then starting on Saturday, there's a fairly relaxed schedule. It's 6 rounds over 2 days. So they break for lunch and they stop in the evening in time for dinner. Like, you get to kind of play without that sort of breakneck tournament pace that's typical of conventions. The WTC actually, you know, lets you be kind of rested and at your best available game, which is really nice. It's one of the virtues of having an event that has that many players, but that has a fifth as many required rounds as that many players would normally need.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Sunday there's like 3 more rounds and an award ceremony, and then we paid the extra to stay for dinner and drinks on Sunday night and crash Sunday. And then I'm going with a group of Canadians on Monday. We're catching the train to Munich, and we're going to hang out in Munich for about a week for Oktoberfest.
Oh, awesome. Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah, wow. So a little bit of a European vacation out of the experience. I'm probably going to think about War Machine a lot during that period of time, but I'm telling myself I'm just going to not.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I think if you guys win, you might be able to shut it off, right? Like, no. I feel like that's not even then.
I think that might make it worse.
It'll be even worse. That's correct. Okay. And I'm tempering my expectations. I would love to do extremely well as a team and for my country, and that's what I'm gunning for. But it could be anything, you know.
Yeah, but it'll be fun regardless, and that's what is important. So let's jump in. So what we kind of brought Tim on to do, because we didn't want to make him give away any tech and diagnose like his own list and pick lists and whatever, which we kind of are still forcing him to
do. Oh, I definitely picked Canadian lists.
Monster.
That's awesome. So what we wanted to do is we each picked two pairings, if there is time, and we're going to kind of diagnose the list, the pair that we like, the pairing, and then we will have Tim comment on it, and go from there. So I will run off my first one, and I just have to pull it up. I went with...
Tell us the team so we can follow along.
I will. It is Mitch Cowan off of New Zealand.
New Zealand.
I was going to say, he was going to make us guess.
Yeah, no,
like,
fuck,
you
no.
You led with the player's name, like the way that it's set up on Conflict Chamber. I have to find the team first.
Well, it's because, no, I know, it's because I was already on the team, so I was finding his name, so that's what came out first.
Cool.
So,
no worries.
My bad.
Cool. Yeah, no, these lists are really strong, and I've seen a couple lists like them.
So I have not seen the one list, but so I will go through it. So his first list is Siege, in Siege 1, obviously, in Storm Division. His battle group is 2 Chargers, 2 Fireflies, a Squire. He has a Junior running a Sentinel, Savio Acosta for free, a Stormblade Captain, Max Stormlances, and 2 Striders. What I really like about the list is, A, you're starting to see Siege more as a Crix drop.
Absolutely.
In general. But I have yet to see Siege in Storm Division, and I really like it. I like the Explosivo on a Storm Strider. I like the feat with that, any of that stuff. I mean, a charging Storm Lance, a charging Acosta under.
Well,
because
his feat is the first damage roll
first
they suffer,
roll
not
they
attack
suffer.
Damage roll.
Correct.
Yeah. So even all the leaps and everything else mm-hmm. start getting really nasty
yeah.
into medium armor.
Medium
heavy
armor
doesn't care about
even
it, but
heavier armor, a charger
oh,
on
no,
feet turn.
Once they shoot it, mm-hmm. yes. But I'm saying the leaps and everything. But
if
yeah,
I can
on meat. Me,
say one thing.
Go ahead. Yeah.
About heavy armor, like I was playing against Siege, and I had Bane Riders, and e-leaps were killing them on their Siege feet.
Yep.
Oh, when I'm saying heavy armor, I mean more like Kador heavies, Convergence heavies, stuff like that. Not, you know, heavy infantry wants to see none of that. The armor piercing electro leaps will murder heavy infantry. They've only got 5 boxes.
This was the list I wanted to mainly talk about, but I will run through his pairing just so we can get a mindset of what he was doing here. He paired that with Kane 3 and heavy metal. This is a little more traditional. He's got ace, 1, 2, 3, 4 chargers, 2 hunters, 2 minutemen, a squire, strange ways, and a sentinel on junior.
Yeah. So for the record, that Kane 3 list, pretty good into heavy armor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah, really good into heavy armor.
This siege list is really strong. It's got some good matchups, but I don't know how it's going to do into like a bunch of marauders. And you're like, oh, look, a list that kills a bunch of marauders.
Oh, look, Kane 3. Yeah,
murders a bunch of marauders.
Yeah, and siege with the chargers, the fireflies, and the e-leaps off of the striders and the lance's melee weapon. I feel like he's got a good infantry clearing list there, too. I don't know. Tim, what do you think about that list?
So the siege list, I played against siege specifically teched as a ghostly lancer a handful of times, and in a number of different hands. And a lot of people look at a caster as explosivo and say, well, siege can have it upkept, have that model RFP a model. He can cast it on himself and he can lay down the hammer, smack that AoE he's got and RFP a bunch of pieces. And then he can cast it on something else, and that model can go out and it can RFP something else. And that's really strong. My experience playing Ghostfoot against it is it's only really, really powerful at addressing the list if you also back it up with a considerable quantity of just reasonable infantry clearing pieces so that you can take out leader models or RFP some pieces that matter and then get up on attrition, having spent an enormous amount of your resources positioning not to get up on attrition but to get up specifically on attrition in a specific kind of quality like RFPing leader models. You then need to kind of play from the back foot, and this list is really, really well designed to play from the back foot because it's got the 2 storm striders who are great at that like quick attrition climb, especially against an army like the Ghost Fleet. He's got the 2 fireflies who are also good for having all those leaps and access to a somewhat disposable model. And then, as a gesture toward the notion that siege can be fairly readily assassinated by Denegra and her guns, he's even got a sentinel for a shield guard.
Yep. I really liked the sentinel on junior. You have not been seeing. People have been straying away for the juniors as a more favoring more towards chargers and fireflies. So I really like to see that.
So, like, you can do a cute thing where he's like, upkeep explosivo, cast explosivo, cast explosivo, and the junior every turn just kind of babysits siege and puts arcane shield back on him. That's pretty good, but Ghost Fleet actually has a specific problem cracking really reasonable armor late game. Like, after the Denegra feat's gone, after you've dealt with all of those things, the list has a little bit of trouble dealing with something like a bunch of arcane shielded Stormstriders. So if you're just like, now the Stormstrider controls the zone and has arcane shield, can you kill it with what charges you have left after Parasite takes it back down to its base armor? And the answer is often no. So that's pretty strong. Normally Denegra's answer to that is she can like send Blessed Stalkers in on it, but the Stalkers go in and they make their first attack and get bumped back to their melee range, assuming that they can get base to base, and they make their second attack and they get bumped out of melee. It's also worth pointing out that if all that your Signar player does is say, remember how Signar is classically a really good place for Ghost Fleet to be in the pairing process, well, now you don't get a W in that column. Instead, you have to find a good place for your Signar player to be. That's a really valuable role in the team. This is not a terrible Steamroller pairing. If I was playing in an event where I knew I would see Ghost Fleet there, I wouldn't have any issue bringing this list.
And then what about Siege? I mean, Siege has been kind of maligned, I'd say, in Mark III. But what about him himself?
Like a lot of things that were just ridiculously strong in Mark II and got ignored because they weren't at the same level of strength in Mark III, I think Siege was ubiquitous in Mark II, and I think in Mark III he's simply very strong. He's got a lot of tools. He's speed 5, which I catch a lot of regular Signar players on. They're like, oh, I walk 60 here, and I'm like, isn't your caster speed 5?
He sure is.
Yeah, but he's pretty great. He went through some kind of weird awkwardness where I think his feet did, like, it may still actually do extra damage to structures.
No, he just has a rule that he does.
Right.
He gets an additional die on damage rolls against structures. His feet doesn't also removes wall.
Get rid of those walls.
Yeah,
specifically removing wall templates. I've yet to see that come up in a particular way, but
out of curiosity, does that remove, like, wall of fire, like the razor wall or whatever the other like danger yes. walls opponents can put out?
Because they're templates. It also removes covering fire.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Not AoE 3s anymore, which I keep thinking they are.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, right, because it says put a wall template out.
He's going to tear the ass out of the Black House when it gets fielded.
Right.
Well, personally, just go weapon master it.
Yeah, done. It's going to happen.
Dead Black House.
You know, hit it with my hammer.
I can have cool trenchers.
So four dice, POW 14, half armor. That'll do it.
Yeah, that'll generally do it.
He's also not terrible in the mirror. He's a pretty cool caster for that particular element of his tools kit.
And with the list that Mitch had taken, too, there's a little bit, being in Storm Division, there's a little bit of that there.
Yeah, there's a lot of Signar lists that are devil heavy metal, and against those lists, your Storm Starters still get to do work against non-Stormwall, non-Hurricane targets. Your entire list is immune to electricity, so you're immune to Hurricane guns, which are some of the better armor cracking in the faction. So, like, your caster's not afraid of like being e-looped to death by Kane 3. So he's got a lot of really good game into a whole bunch of Signar. And a list that has really good game into the most popular Krix list or the second most popular Krix list, also the other popular Krix list, and then a whole bunch of Signar seems like a really strong place to be in this format.
All right, so let's jump over to Ryan, and we'll have him go with one of the lists he picked.
Yep. I ended up going with England Rose, Jim Gradwell. And his Kador pairing, just because a lot of the Kador field was very, I guess, boring. It was somewhat redundant or somewhat repetitive. He actually ended up going with a Zarkova 1, Zarkova 2 pairing. And the Zarkova 2 is out of theme. It's Zarkova 2 with her buddies, Behemoth, Silas, a Colden Lord, Ragman, Outriders Min, Outriders Max, Iona Holt with Valachev, and then a Winter Guard carriage. It's an interesting list. It will, between the RFP from Ragman, it has some game into Ghost Fleet, which I know is not. You said, Tim, your personal experience with that was a little different.
I mean, I've played it as a tool to answer to Ghost Fleet before. I played that at MomCon against the players like I brought Zarkova 2 to be a Ghostly Dancer, and it was really impressive. He did a ton of work. He killed like fully 90% of my army. He killed the Kane Slinger. He killed all but one member of each Revenant unit, the ones that were like in my deployment zone. He moved the line of engagement to like my side of the board. On my turn, I activated Tengra, feed it on his army, and walked 7 inches straight backward to not just die. However, and this is always the danger of playing a list that's got great infantry clearing but lacks a certain element of anti-recursion. I then brought models back in each of those units. I rolled one on each of my Deathbound rolls, so I brought two models back in each unit, and I killed both Outrider units. And then he had a turn that was under Denegra's feet, so it didn't do much work. And then I brought more models back and had a turn where I did a little bit more work. And at the end of the game, he ran out of pieces and lost on scenario when I had Max all of my Revenants back.
I hadn't thought about this before. Was that in 2016 or 2017?
That was in 2016. So do you think that a little bit in 2017. Setting the line of engagement that far forward can give her a lot of scoring potential. There is a weird thing where like both Doom Reavers need to be within 4 inches of a flag to score it.
Yeah, it's going to be a little odd.
But, I mean, she's still got tools and she can still score pieces. The Ion on Hold plus Valachev package is actually really good at just like being a unit that can score a zone late, because sometimes you like scapple at Ion and you're like, cool, now I don't care about those guys. And then she's like, they can still score a zone.
I will say one of the things that I liked a lot about the list was the biggest problem with the Outriders is, and her feet and everything else that she wants to take, is the POW 12s. And with Ion on Hold and Ragman, they can actually still threaten a lot of the medium armor lists too.
Yeah, because the Harm becomes friendly faction with Valachev. So she gets to, and it's really cute too, because she gets to like get the extra die from Zarkova, and she gets to move up and cast Harm and then Zephyr back, so she's out of threat, or she gets to like get 3 extra inches on the Harm. I don't know. I really like the package. I think it's a cool list. It's got a lot of good tools.
Yeah, I like it, and it's different, which is what I kind of like. It's something a little, because Kator's got a lot of really good stuff that doesn't get used right now, because it's been kind of pierced down to 3 or 4 different things that get repeated a lot.
And then what did he pair that with?
He went with Zarkova 1, 2 Juggernauts, a Marauder, 2 Kovniks, 2 Iron Fang Kovniks for free, Malakov, Black Dragon's Min with Officer Markov. Yeah, sorry. Great Bears, Iron Fang, Pikeman, Max, and then two min units of Iron Fang Ulans. This is probably my favorite version of Legion of Steel, just because with the Cloud Wall and all the counter charges, if someone tries to come up and negate your Cloud Wall by moving models into it, you get to counter charge through your whole force and try to wipe out whatever they were going to be trying to do that with. And then I think she has the most fun delivering the Legion of Steel stuff. She gives it a little bit more options that the other casters don't.
I actually like her her feet with them too.
Yeah, because it stops him from shooting. She basically can buy two full rounds between the Cloud Wall and she still threatens a decent assassination with the sprays and everything that she can get off.
My only criticism of her is sometimes I feel like she lacks the armor cracking that like an Arusk 1 or an Arusk 2 Legion of Steel list would have.
Absolutely.
Double mini wands help that a lot. You can pretty readily deliver all six of those good charges to relevant places. All
right, Brad, let's
you go got on. It. So I wasn't a homer. I didn't pick my home faction. We're going down to Swiss Cheese, Team Switzerland Cheese, and the very interestingly named player, Player 5.
How? So original. I love it.
Is there any other Player 5s?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just didn't put names in. So the one list that I, of course, want to talk about was Sturman Drang in the Thornfall Alliance. He has two Battle Boars, one choice of Razor Boars, which gets you two of them, two Warhogs, Alton Ashley, Saxon Oryk, a Swamp Gower Chef, a max unit of Brigands with the Warlord, two Razorback Crews, which are for free, and then two units of Slaughterhousers. That's paired with, just to touch on this now, Carver 1 with a Battle Boar, a Gun Boar, a Splatter Boar, two Warhogs, Targ, Maximus, and then the same thing, Brigands Max with the Warlord, two Razorbacks crews that are free, and then two units of Slaughterhousers. So to go over the Sturman Drang list a little bit, I know what all of those models do individually, but as a conglomerate and as a single list, I have no idea what it does.
Nice. I don't either, so I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some thoughts.
I picked it because I like Sturman Drang. I've played against Sturman Drang twice. Both the lists that I played against were wildly different. And I've always just kind of liked the idea of having to make a choice each turn on what caster you're going to get. So that's why I want to talk about Sturman Drang, even though I don't know much about them.
Sorry, Tim. Just real quick, because my son played a lot of Minions before switching over to Grimkin. One, this player made the right choice by taking the free Pharaoh Razorback crews, vice the taunt, you know, the effort scouts. I personally feel that is the right choice every time. Sturman Drang, if I'm correct, has shield guards on his battle boars.
In the Sturm version.
Yes. Yeah. And then with the Warhogs and Primal off the battle boars. Is it Primal? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So this is a really effective Fianna 2 drop because they're going to hit really hard, really accurately, and when they do touch one of the Naraths, they're just going to destroy it. You also have prey on the brigands. That's
even around the feet.
Yeah. Absolutely. And like I said, correct me if I'm wrong, Tim.
No, I think you're probably right about that. There's some things about this that are really strong. So Sturm and Drang have Field Marshal Shield Guard in the Sturm version. And then in the Drang version, he has Field Marshal... It's something irrelevant. It's like Overtake.
Yep.
But he also, more importantly, has Pack Hunter, which is +2 to melee attack rolls. And then, so Fianna feats, and he's like, I'm going to switch to Drang... have a reasonable number of transfers to not be assassinated next turn and maybe put out a primal on something. And then, you know, he can gain killing ground if he wants to, but most of the time he just camps. And then you're like, this beast has +4 mat. So you give a +4 mat swing to a Warhog, which means, like, in the right moments, they can boost if they need to, but most of the time being mat 10 is enough to do work against something like a Nerf, especially the Furied Nerf, or those pieces on her feet turn that are kind of risky. And you can dig a little bit deeper into the army, or you can kill some of the pieces that matter. And Fianna's general shtick is she kind of needs you to lose 50% of your attacks on the feet turn, either by having a good evasive proc or by forcing you to boost when you otherwise wouldn't want to boost. And the opportunity cost on just getting a +4 mat swing is so low in this list that it doesn't lose anything to have that on that turn, which is like a little bit better than boosting all of your attack rolls. So if a mat 6 war beast goes in on a Nerf that's under Fianna's feet, he has to boost all his attack rolls, so he loses half his attacks right away, and then eventually he misses and loses the rest of them. And she gets to keep a beast alive she shouldn't be able to keep alive in a normal peace trade. In this version of the list, gets to apply that without needing to boost. If he needs to shore it up or he's got really good damage potential available on something like a charge, he can still boost it, and then you can kill those pieces. It's a really surgical approach, and it's aided by things in the list like Alt and Ashley, who can scapel out a relevant column, or they can do work against a piece in that. I think this is great for the Legion matchup, and it's possible that's what it's teched for. Also, both lists have that module of Brigands with Warlord, 2 Slaughterhouser units, and 2 Razorback crews. So if you're looking at this pairing, and you're like, okay, I need to drop my list that has pretty good answers to reasonable guns and has moderate amounts of infantry clearing, the minion player can say, okay, I know exactly what they're going to drop that provides both of those answers. I'll choose either Carver or Sturmandrang, depending on whether I need accuracy or I need damage potential.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Good
and,
stuff.
And just being a shield guard with a bunch of war beasts is pretty cool. Like, you know, Razor Boars or Shield Guard are really terrible. Like, mm-hmm. they're just really aggressive.
That and Carver has Batten Down, so you can push armor a little bit if you do go with the Carver end of it.
Yeah, I like these lists. I think they're really strong. Psychic Apocalypse doesn't work the way people think it does.
Is that Sturmdrang's feat?
It is, yeah.
Yep.
It reduces everybody's Fury stat to 1, which means the Fury currently on them drops down as well. So, like, you put all their war beasts down to Fury 1. Cute fact.
Oh, I know what you're going to... The assassination?
Yep.
Oh, I'm so excited. Keep going.
Yeah. If you're going in on an assassination on a caster and they've got, like, 3 beasts they can transfer to that are all on, like, 1 or 2, and you're like, feat, Psychic Apocalypse, all of your beasts are now maxed out.
They're full. Fuck.
And then you just assassinate them with something stupid like, you know, just a warhog or, like, a bunch of shots from some brigands, and they're like, but I had 3 transfers. And you're like, huh, no transfers.
No, you're zero. Get wrecked, nerd.
That really could get a cat... Because, I mean... Legion or Hordes players are used to having, okay, my caster's in a dangerous spot, but I've got 3 transfers and they've only got 3 attacks on me. I'm fine.
Yeah, you've got to have 1 or 2 war beasts on none.
Yeah, it's and like in Legion, you're like my Seraph slipstreams for 1, my Naga casts Wraithbane over here or boosts a shot. My Nerfs all go in and they kill like 1 thing and sprint back and blah blah blah, and they all do their stuff. And you're like, okay, everything's on 1 or 2, but I've got Fury Management pieces, and this Forsaken that took 4 the previous turn is just going to take 1, and this will take this beast down to 2, and I'm perfect for my Fury Management. And Fianna's camping 3, and she can transfer next turn. And they're like, all of those things aren't transfer targets anymore. Your admonition doesn't matter because I'm shooting you. You're dead.
Love it. Brad, you would be pick one of the 6 minion players in the entire WTC.
I like Sturmandrang.
No, it's awesome. It was a very good choice. It was just funny.
Petey Bear, what you got?
Okay, we are going to Austria to the awesomely named Team Austria Schwarzenegger.
Yes. It's awesome. On
And board. I'm going to apologize, Lucas. I think your name is Lucas Neuhauser. You're playing Scorn. And, I am absolutely in love with this list. It is his first list. It is in the theme of Imperial Warhost. He is running Xerxes 2 with 7 Arcanons, a free Agonizer, 2 free Basculus Kreas, Tiberian, and 2 min units of Paingiver Beast Handlers.
And his other list doesn't matter because he's got that.
It's Resheth 1 and Winds of Death. It's a pretty standard Resheth build from what I've seen.
Double turtle,
which is cool. Mm-hmm. Double siege animatrix.
No, I'm kidding. Read through the list.
All right, yeah. So it's Resheth 1 with a Kriya, a Raider, 2 Shamans. So he's going for that Eyeless Sight assassination. He has a free Soul Ward, a Soul Ward that he paid for. A Willbreaker for free, a Venator Dakar for free, max Paingiver Beast Handlers, a max unit of Reaver or Venator Reavers with command attachment, a min unit of Slingers, and then 2 Siege Animatrix.
I like the min Slingers.
That'll shoot the shit out of something, yeah.
I really like the choice of min Slingers.
Let's talk about that Xerxes 2 nonsense, though.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. We are kind of enamored with this list, so much so that I may have bought all the stuff to do it.
Oh, stop. Did you buy seven Archdons?
No. Pete, how many Archdons did you buy this weekend?
Five.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple of cool things about this list. Obviously, the feat with Archdons is pretty crazy. The extended control range on your Fury 5 caster basically addresses all of the possible problems he could have. Tiberian as a late game closer is really awesome. Getting your Kreas and your Agonizer for free is really spectacular. Cool thing about Archdons is they hit really, really well when you give them Mat 8, which you can do with an upkeep. And they damage really well when you give them Ignite, which you can do with an upkeep. And they can be 40 inches away from your caster with Rapport, and they're still in your control area. So they can dig really, really deep into the back lines. They give your caster access to just no knockdown beasts that can screen and block lanes really well. Because you can't really block line of sight to Xerxes, and he really wants to get into the mix a little bit himself. I played a fair bit of Xerxes too, and the Archdons were one of my favorite pieces in the list.
Do this bastard sprint 9 with the field marshal?
Yep.
Sure do.
Yeah. Sure the fuck do. They're fast.
Additionally,
as hell.
The theme force gives them +2-inch deployment zone.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, my God.
This list gets up the table really, really fast, and it plays the entire game on your side of the scenario, which is really, really strong. Archdons are fairly squishy if you can hit them. They're only arm 16, and they don't have a ton of boxes, so they will go down. Fortunately, the redundancy in the list is he has 7. Pro tip, this list is kind of amazing into Signar.
Yes.
You wouldn't think.
No.
Because not only does it have 2 Kreia bubbles that can babysit an enormous number of Archdons,
but they're all immune to lightning.
A shield guard with hyper aggressive, they are all immune to lightning.
Yeah.
So, like, Nemo 3 wants no part of this business.
Wait, Archdons are immune to lightning?
Yeah, they are now. Yeah.
From the storm reaches, they play in lightning all the time.
Yep. They don't give a fuck about lightning.
It is their jam.
Yeah, and so if Xerxes casts the Kreia Animus, and then you have the 2 Kreias at the edge to cast the Animus, I think it's like an 11-inch bubble of Kreia Animus.
Well, isn't the bubble 5 inches around it?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, just on him. He's 11 inches.
Yeah. I was gonna say, it's way bigger than that. If it's
You've got like 21 inches.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's freaking ridiculous.
Yeah. Peach sent me this list just because I didn't want to overlap, and I was immediately like, fucking in love with it.
I have to admit too, in 2017 with the terrain the way it is and all the flight and everything, you're gonna have a hard time when they set the line of battle on your deployment edge. Basically, you're gonna have a hard ass time getting into those elements.
So I'm kind of good
to crit pitch everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he get his feet, they get what, Hand of Fate, basically, on both attack and damage rolls.
No, you get sound importance for everything.
It's kind of better than that because you pick. So if you're like,
oh Christ,
I need 6 to hit, 5-3-3. Oh, cool, a crit pitch.
Oh yeah.
So all right, this is
yeah.
Because I'm like running through my head of like what, like how do I kill it, and like I have like some ideas, and I'm like, oh shit, Tiberian's still alive. That's a problem. Yeah. Are we done talking about Xerxes too?
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing. I'm just looking forward to painting one Archdon of each color. Because we sat down and mapped it out, and we're like, well, there's got to be 7 colors that we can paint them all. So it'll be fun.
Are you gonna go like indigo, violet, like?
Are you gonna have the rainbow of Archdons?
No, that's what we're gonna do for sure.
Yeah.
Red, orange, yellow. Green,
blue, purple.
Hang on. Blue, indigo, violet. Is that? That's it. That's 7, right?
Yeah.
I
think we're going to slip in a brown and a gray just for fun. But yeah.
Let's have the whole rainbow then.
Yeah. I'll post pictures as I get them painted. It'll be amazing.
All right. Back to Grant. So,
no, let's go through Tim. Let's go to Tim. And we'll
Tim gets a pick.
I'm going to pick my own team.
Such a homer. Such bullshit.
Are you moose, goose, or beaver?
Or miss.
Okay.
Okay, so I picked to talk about, because I've got some expertise on them, lists in my own team, which is Team Canada Moose. Because they're kind of boring and you've already seen them before, I'm going to skip over my lists, which are largely uninteresting and uninspired. I've played them at a bunch of conventions before and you've all seen them and they're boring. Josh talked about this on Moose Machine a couple of weeks ago, but his pairing is actually one of the ones that I'm most excited about.
I wanted to pick this, but I was like, I shouldn't pick the Canada tech for Tim, but oh, I'm so excited.
It's really good.
I asked him before you jumped on if we could talk about it, Brad, and he said yes, so I was excited.
So I did talk to Brad about this at Nova, but the list that Josh is playing, this was worked on by a number of people. Jason Lucas did some testing with me in person at our local shop here. Josh tested it extensively himself, working with Dave Beauchamp and a couple of others. John Damaris is the person who originally turned us on to the tech and worked with us extensively, posting pictures back and forth and talking about positioning and matchups and stuff. But this is a sweet list, and I'm really excited to see that a couple of other people have cottoned onto it too. There's a few other lists out there that are playing some of the things that are in it. I'll go over the list really quickly. It's High Reclaimer 2, which is to say the Testament of Benoth. His battle group is Devout, Revenger, Revenger. People are going to talk about Sanctifiers, yes, no, and the answer is no, but we'll come back to that in a second. Free Knight Exemplar, Seneschal. Vassal Mechanic and Rack. A variant of this list would be two Racks, but Josh settled on the Vassal Mechanic and Rack, and I trust him because he's an excellent WTC-worthy player who I picked for my team, so if I didn't trust him at this point, I'd be pretty screwed. Min Choir, max unit of Exemplar Errants with UA, second max unit of Exemplar Errants with UA, and then a Knight Exemplar unit with a free UA, a Knight Exemplar unit with a free UA, and a third Knight Exemplar unit without a free UA. Okay.
This list is incredible. And only because it's not in front of them, there's not even a bought UA, so it's just one unit with no UA.
That's correct.
Yes. Correct, yes.
Yeah.
You've used up all of your free stuff, and your points are fully committed. The pairing for that is Amon, or Edraza, as Josh likes to say. There's as many Raza lists as there are Colors of the Wind, and with Faithful Masses, there's going to be even more. But the version that we settled on at the bar the night before potential list lock outside while his partner Chris wanted to go home and watch the fight that night, and I was like, Josh, I need you for 20 minutes, and we just need to hammer this out. The version here is Crusader times 4, Dervish times 4, Devout, Templar, and then Free Covenant, Triple Mechanics, Double Vassal, both free, Rack times 1, Double Min Choir. And I'm very happy with that version of the list. It's one that Josh has a lot of familiarity with. We have tried, since January, I believe, every version of Amon that exists. This is the one that I'm happiest for where he is in our team and the matchups that I want to be responsible for.
Every version of Amon?
A lot of versions of
Amon. You try Amon Double Judicator?
We did. We did try Amon Double
Judicator. Oh, you got to be shitting me.
No, I'm not. We tried Amon Double Revelator. We tried Amon Revelator Judicator. We tried Amon with 4 Templars. We tried Amon... For a while, we were playing Amon with 5 Devouts.
I thought for sure I would have had you.
No. I mean, we haven't played Faithful Masses because it's not going to be legal. But we've done a lot of Amon testing, and Josh is really... Like, he sings with his caster. It's really impressive to watch him play.
Is this the list you like the most, or just the list you like the most in this pairing with Josh?
The list I like in this pairing the most of Josh is the Testament list.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I meant for Amon.
Oh, the context is key. It's even more specific than that. This is the pairing that I like the most for the matchups I want to put Josh into at the WTC.
What's that tech?
Just don't
reveal that.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things I'm going to keep him on and some things I'm going to keep him off. I'm quite comfortable putting him into a lot of the field, though. So that's one of the reasons I really like this Testament list, is it just dumpsters Ghost Fleet. Like, if I'm playing this against a player who knows what they're doing and knows how the list works and knows how Ghost Fleet works and isn't just going to give me their caster, I don't know if I can win. Stop.
Against Amon or against Testament?
Testament.
Against Testament.
Testament. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
So he has a Devout, which is anti-spell tech, protects him a little bit from Scourge. Not completely, but a little bit. Protects him from Crippling Grasp, and it protects him from Parasite, so it gives him tools to make it a little bit harder to spell assassinate in. Not impossible, but a little bit harder. And you just need to put up a little bit of a barrier so you can buy yourself time against the Negra. You have 2 Arc Nodes, and one of them you can put a Righteous Vengeance spell on, so those Arc Nodes can run 10, one of them can run functionally 13, which is a similar depth of threat to a Death Ripper. You can see how popular they are, and it's there for a reason. That allows you to dig really, really deep in the army with your RFP spell, which is Dust to Dust, to rip leader models off the table. Your units of Errants, they AD, and they get +2 inches of deployment, so they capitalize on a ton of table space. A lot of the tech that traditionally works really, really well against Ghost Fleet by RFPing specific pieces would normally be an issue for someone like Testament, who wants to collect souls from his army and also be able to return models to play. Errants deny a lot of those effects by simply having self-sack. The circumstances in which you get to say, like, oh, your Blackbane kills my guy, removes him from play, and creates a Blackbane. Well, I don't need to collect that soul. He's going to self-sack, and I'll be able to return him to play later by spending real focus on it.
Ugh.
And you've got a lot of tools to just kill those Blackbanes, like your Blessed Crossbows that you have an 18-inch assaulting threat on. So he's got, like, a ton of board presence. Now, the problems we have with Exemplar Interdiction when we were testing it with Vindictus and Harbinger and a number of other casters is Exemplar Interdiction takes up board space, but it has a lot of problems, and classic Menoth problems, it has a lot of problems with Pathfinder. So instead, you have a feat that gives you Pathfinder. Now, that's all I need the feat to do. If the feat just said, you get Pathfinder and Tactician for a turn, which in a lot of matchups, that's all it does say, it would be totally fine, and you don't need to play it for anything more than a turn of really excellent Pathfinder. But what it actually gives you is incorporeal, and there's a lot of play that you've got available to you by having access to that. Moreover, you've got this incredible spell assassination when they just kill your entire army with an amazing attrition swing turn, something casters like Denegra are, you know, love to do, and then you turn around and say, okay, I have 27 focus, I guess I'm just going to dust to dusty.
12 dust to dust, no big deal.
Yeah, and that's what Josh did. He played into Thexus, and Thexus camped 6 focus, but had his army do a ton of work with explosions and sprays and all kinds of stuff, and just put a huge amount of pressure on his list. And Josh was like, all right, guess I'm just going to put, like, 9 fully boosted dust to dust into your caster.
Oh, my God.
And just kill him, like, super reliably through 6 focus. And you can do that. Like, this list has that depth. Now, the other thing it has is, you know those lists where you're like, I just got bullied out of the scenario, or my pieces got cleared and you just kept having scenario presence up on me? Well, this list gets to return so many of its pieces, that's never an issue. They kill, let's say they kill 4 unit models in a knight unit. So normally what happens with knight units is they're pretty good at protecting themselves, and they screen themselves with distance and errants. So with guns and with pressure, most enemy lists are going to kill 2 or 3 models in a knight unit. And then the next turn, the remaining models are going to be battle-driven, they're going to do some work, and they're going to kill 2 or 3 models in that knight unit. And then the turn after that, they're going to finish it. So you get a diminishing return on the amount of work the unit does, but they're going to kill them over the course of 3 turns. Testament says no. Instead, he says, you're going to kill 2 or 3 knight units, and I'm going to return those models. The whole unit's going to be battle-driven, and those guys have to forfeit combat action this turn. The unit does a bunch of work. And they're like, I'm going to kill 2 or 3 models. And he's like, cool. They do the same amount of work they did last turn, mm-hmm. and they're full again. So his knights hang, like, for a super long period of time. They kill wraith engines. They kill battle engines of any stripe. They kill colossals. Like, they just do so much work. It's very difficult to not have them be battle-driven a lot of the time, because you just have to start doing work against this army.
Yep.
And what you have to do to play against a caster who's going to collect as many souls as he is and has as much tools to just assassinate you with multiple arc nodes is you have to just peel off pieces of his army gradually a little bit at a time. But against a recursion caster, you can't afford to do that. You have to wipe full units. You have to clear huge swaths of infantry so that you keep his recursion in check. So he has this yin and this yang problem where you want to do a ton of work against his army, but you can't afford to, and that means you're vulnerable to his recursion tools.
Yeah, that sounds brutal.
It does. So, I mean, outside, not that a lot of these lists don't have play out of WT6, obviously they do, but I mean, do you think this is like this list is like just all around good, right?
I think it straight solves Menoth's pairing problem that I've seen them have for 2 years.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's saying something.
Yeah. Brad?
Pete, yeah, no, Tim and I talked about this at Nova, and I feel like the rest of that night and a little bit the next morning was like, what do I build in Crypt to like, play against it? And right. The answers are not all that self-revealing.
What's crazy about it, too, is because of how far Menoth's dropped off in at least public opinion, I mean, you're going to blindside the hell out of just about everybody with this thing.
You're going to
get a podcast. And,
yeah, well, now there's been 2 players from the same team like telling them how good this list is, so maybe not.
Well, yeah, but this,
just
the lists are still
how
already
good it is
constructed.
Doesn't stop it from doing it at once.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, this feels like one of those things, especially I've had that incident where I went with 2 teps and removed a ridiculous amount of infantry with High Reclaimer 2 and was like feeling really good about myself, and then they went and obliterated they didn't assassinate me, but they just killed my entire army with spells. It was hysterical.
So
he's good at that.
I think that's some really good analysis on that list. That list sounds so just so gross. I'm not looking forward to seeing that if that becomes a thing. I'm gonna let Ryan go next because Ryan has to leave soon and go to work. So I'm gonna let him jump my place and give us his other pairing so we can talk about before he has to go.
Let's do it.
So the list is actually in two spots, kind of. On the Finland teams, both of the Finland teams, not the leftovers, both have convergence players who are playing almost the exact same list in both sides. It's Lucant and Axis. The Lucant list, this is Jonas Herneman? Or Herneman? I don't know. I'm even going to guess at that one.
Heinonen.
He's got Lucant, a Corollary Diffuser, Galvanizer, Primaxium, a bunch of Bomb Servitors, and then Attunement Servitors, which are the Anti-Stealth, Optifex Directive, and then two TEPs. And then his Axis list is a Corollary Diffuser, which is the Charge Further Jacks, and then three Inverters, which are the Knockdown Jacks. Two squads of Elimination Servitors, three squads of Reflex Servitors, which are the bombs, and Optifex Directive, and then the two TEPs. The other player on their other team has almost the exact same lists. The lack of Galvanizer spam is kind of interesting because most of the other Convergence lists have, it's not always Axis, but it has something in there. I will say, though, the Axis 1 list with the Inverters is actually hysterical into anybody who has any kind of repositioning force. There's a bunch of Ret Jacks that get it with Admonition, and then Legion has a lot. They don't get to a lot knocked down on a bunch of the Legion Jacks, but because of Axis's mat, it can be kind of entertaining to watch someone reposition away from you and then you countercharge them. And you get really nice swings with that, especially because of Iron Aggression working on charge attacks.
Pro tip for anyone who doesn't know this. If you charge a model that has Admonition and it Admonitions away from you and you have countercharge and you then countercharge it, you get to resolve two
charge attacks.
Yep. Yeah. And you know the people that know that? The people that found that out the hard way.
Yeah, I remember the first time I did that to somebody. It was with an Inverter who had Iron Aggression on him. And they admo it. And I'm like, well, this is the first attack that I'm... This is my first initial after a charge. And it's like, oh. I'm like, it's a charge attack then, right? And it's like, oh, shit. Yeah, it didn't go real well for
him. Charges. So, that's interesting.
Before we bring Tim in, Ryan, let me ask you what about these lists versus just other, like, what drew you to this? Or just that you thought it was different than
so,
the other ones?
Well, one of the things that it did that a lot... I mean, there's a lot of convergence, or I should say... The convergence players it had actually had a lot of variety of which lists they were bringing. But this is one of the few that had the double TEPs in it in both lists. And I think that while it forecasts, it helps combat the fact that convergence, you kind of know what you're getting. They have to bring something that can survive TEPs. And the battle groups that are in these are good at eliminating stuff that can survive TEPs.
Well, to use, like, Tim's, do you think it's similar to the Minions thing where he's got the module that,
yeah,
like...
absolutely.
The caster and the other answers. Like, you have to be able to deal with that, but he's going to change what he wants to do based off of
correct.
His caster
the,
slash battle
the group. Other thing it does is that both Lucant and Axis have poor access to ranged options, and two TEPs fixes that pretty quickly.
Sure. All right, Tim, what do you got for us on these?
You're right about a lot of the things that I was going to point out. The double TEP is, I think, maybe one of the scariest things that Convergence can project right now, and I think they're putting it in both lists. The German players are really, really strong, and this is a rough dodge for a bunch of factions, and putting dodges into your five gives you a lot of power when it comes to the pairing process. They're really committing hard to the diffuser game, and I think that's actually kind of clever. One of the problems that I've seen Convergence players have is when they struggle with really static threat ranges,
yep,
after the lines have closed and things have kind of softened up. And the theme force usually has to bleed a bunch of servitors to deal with that, where you're like, I've got static threat ranges, but look, a servitor blocking your charge lane. You're going to come up and deal with it, and I'm going to countercharge you, and we're going to play that kind of dance. Whereas those servitors are actually really, really powerful pieces in the list. And if you can hold them and save them to late game, it gives you a ton of options. So they're using like a leveraged diffuser to kind of combat the problem of having to bleed servitors early in the game, which I think is really smart. Lucant Axis is the pairing I would be bringing if I was playing Convergence at a bit right now. And Destruction Initiative is the only way to play the faction, at least for another couple of weeks.
Yep. The other thing I like, too, about the Lucant list is it may not be the most optimized Lucant list, but it plays, especially in the team format, if you've got something where you're like, we need a sacrificial pawn, like somebody needs to go in and take the loss. Lucant plays a really weird game where it so turns into such a grindy mess, especially with a Prime Axiom in it, that there's a good chance you can go into what would be a, you know, an absolute punt, and there's enough, you make enough opportunities for your opponent to make that mistake that you can absolutely capitalize on, which I kind of like having that in, it seems like it would be useful to have in the pairings.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
On to Grant.
Back to me. We're going to go to Team Poland. And I promise I picked this before Tim said that he always liked the Polish guys' lists.
The Hussars, so the Knights, bad. Or the Warriors?
It is going to be on the Warriors, and I'm going to mispronounce it. Martin Nowicki?
Yeah, that's pretty close enough.
I don't
Another Signar guy? You're really venturing out of your comfort
because,
zone, huh?
No, because here's the thing. I looked at a lot of these. I looked at all the lists, and I just, some of them, I do not have the capacity like Tim to look at these lists and understand what they fucking do.
Wait, you don't have the same capacity as a world-class player?
I don't have the same capacity as any somewhat decent player for that. So I stuck in my comfort zone because I wanted to be able to talk about the list, and at least with Signar, I can go, all right, I can at least look at this list and go, I know what this list wants to do. Kinda.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk about it. All
right. So his first list, this is not the list I want to talk about, but I'm just going to mention it for the pairing. It is Striker 1 and Heavy Metal with a Hurricane, a Stormwall, a Free Squire, Free Strangeways, Free Junior running a Charger, a Free Jakes running a Cyclone, and Max Mechanics. That's just a pretty good Striker 1 armor brick list. The list that I like...
So-called Jaeger list.
Is that what it is?
The Europeans call it the Jaeger list. I think it's a reference to a film called Pacific Rim.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it just has two big stompy robots of two varieties.
Sure. Kaiju. That makes sense. But the list that I liked here is his Nemo 3 list. And it is Nemo 3 in Storm Division with a Centurion, a Firefly, a Free Squire, Junior running a second Firefly, Lattermore, a Free Acosta, a Free unit of three Stormsmiths for free, and then two more modules of three Stormsmiths, two Storm Towers, and two Storm Striders.
So nine Storm Callers.
It would be nine Storm Callers. There are no Storm Knights outside of Acosta and Lattermore in this list.
But then you get the two Storm Towers and... Oh, no, they didn't have a Storm Wall.
Nope.
Yep. I love this list.
I do,
absolutely
too.
I love it.
I think it's super interesting. He's got a Centurion to just go Polarity Field, and with his spell, you're not fucking moving that Centurion goddamn anywhere. He's just going to sit. Lattermore can just go... be a baller and hold a flag or sit at, you know, 10 boxes and a dismount.
Do the Stormcallers have to hit now?
They do. They do still have to hit.
So it's not just like remove all your
infantry.
But they
get +2 with the Stormstrider.
And a Stormstrider also acts as a Stormcaller.
As an arc. Okay.
So you can get these Stormcallers, because you have nine of them, all over the goddamn board and just be triangulating and surge call, like, everywhere. And on feet turn, it's three dice pal 10s or 12s if you have a Firefly around. I don't know. At the Storm Towers, same thing. It's super interesting. This is totally different than
I mean, you do
I've
just
seen.
Get to pick where you want your stuff to go.
Yeah.
Tim,
go
talk
ahead,
to my
Tim.
Face.
Talk to me about this.
This is a really weird list.
it's so awesome.
It is. It totally is. So there's some things here that are really strong. So Storm Calls are ranged attacks now. They're Rat 6 ranged attacks.
Yep.
As you pointed out, the Storm Tower, the Storm Striders make them Rat 8 ranged attacks. They ignore stealth, they ignore concealment, they ignore cover, and they ignore elevation. So they're ranged attacks, but only in that they have to roll against defense values. They have access to triangulation, which is similar but somewhat different to their previous effect. They get to make like a big 20-inch circle, and they get to tap things that are in the circle.
Yep.
Same thing with the surge, they get to hit two of them. So here's the thing that's really, really powerful about what Poland does every single time. I feel like they always build lists that are unpredictable, that don't attack the game in a very traditional vector, that are probably objectively less powerful than some of the more tuned lists, but have like a really, really credible assassination attempt. And they play for 3 out of 5 assassinations by taking like 5 70 percenters. Now, okay. Normally in a War Machine tournament, if you play 5 rounds of a War Machine tournament and you take 70 percenters every time, you're never going to win Masters. But then WTC, if 5 players take 70 percenters, you're going to win every round.
Yeah.
And they've done it before, and they've won this event before. Like, they're a good group of people, really, really tight players, and they're notoriously quiet about their tech. And I think this list is crazy, and it's weird, and I haven't figured it out yet, and it's terrifying.
So, I wanted to ask you, because I just said I could diagnose the list, but, like, what does this list want to do?
I'm curious. See, if they still all auto-hit, I'd be like, okay, this is just incredibly accurate troop removal. But, like, is this literally to go into the pairing and say, all right, I'm probably going to play Striker 1, and then they're going to go over and go, but I have no fucking clue. Like, I don't know what this other list does, well, and, like, try to give them some analysis paralysis?
So the issue with the Stormcallers is even though you have 9 of them, they're Def 13, Arm 11, and they have no boxes. So they just die to anything. But
they'll be behind houses, they'll be behind forests.
Right, and terrain, like, they could be all over the place, and then you just get to, what, like, you could just pick off models. Yeah, and just draw lines, and you just like, oh, I need this UA dead? Okay, I'm going to go here, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think you can run them up the flank really, really widely. And you can, like, you can send them so far out that you're like, do you want to commit, like, an actual relevant model to going and killing this irrelevant solo that's worth, like, less than 2 points? And you're like, no, I obviously can't do that. And they're like, cool, it's going to keep running until it gets to your backfield. And then it and its buddy are going to laser some choir members. Or, like, they're just going to put some damage into some things that don't deserve to get damage into them.
And, like go ahead.
No, finish your
thought. No, I was just going to say, he's just going to go throw a Centurion in his zone and go, whatever, like, you're not doing anything here, like, have fun.
And then, it's just 2 Stormstriders.
Right, and then there's 2 Stormstriders, and he has 2 armor buff spells. Now, granted, I'm sure one of them probably goes on the storm on the Centurion, but if you don't need it to, you just ball your Stormstriders out and you just take one side of the table, and it's just electric boogaloo 2.
It's a lot of potential Weapon Master Pow 10s. You've also got, like, cute things you can do. Like, the way triangulation works is usually one of the models making the triangle will run to make a big enough triangle for one of them to do the shooting. Well, the one that you run is going to be out of Nemo's control area, but the one that's not out of in Nemo's control area is the one actually making the damage rolls. So that one's going to benefit from the feat.
That's
so
cute.
So, like, you can have feated damage rolls on a caster who's, like, so...
Downtown.
Yeah. Like... I could be in my deployment zone, and Nemo's, like, stupid storm caller who ran for 3 turns is going to be like, look at me, I'm over here. And then you're like, okay, I triangulate. I mean, he's got 9 storm callers, and he has to send 2 on the back edge of your board so that he can have, like,
hypothetically,
7?
If he can run 1 base-to-base behind you, that means all the others can triangulate off that 1, right?
It does have a 20-inch restriction, but 20 inches is pretty big.
But I'm saying if, like, one of the points of the triangle is right behind your Warcaster,
yeah,
it's kind of like auto-in for all the other ones.
I mean, probably. Especially in Mark III, Weapon Master, that many POW 10 boosted damage rolls, that'll kill a lot of casters.
Yep.
That'll kill a lot of casters.
Denegra's only armor 14.
15 if she keeps Parasite.
Sure.
Yeah, no, she's going to die.
And I don't know if you guys mentioned it, the shots ignore concealment, cover, elevation, and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they're also these like pretty great like solo removal pieces.
I mean,
don't know.
Is this a Crix drop? Like, is this like a like?
Tim says he doesn't know what this list does.
I know, but we've all looked at it for another minute. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he's figured it out.
give me Tim.
Did you get it yet?
Plus or minus. Yeah. It's scary. And I think part of the thing that is anxiety inducing for me is you ever look across the board at a pair of lists and you're like, oh, these lists are bad. This player's bad.
And in my turn 3, you don't know what happened to you?
Well, I definitely know this player's not bad. So that means that I don't know what's going on.
Right.
And that's concerning.
Yeah. So it's one thing if you see a bad player with a bad list, but when you see a good player with a list you think is bad, that's probably bad for you, right?
I mean, or the head games are so next level.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine if they just submitted a bad list to be like, I wonder what they'll think of this?
I'm totally just gonna fuck him and make him get into such a mind fuck that he plays so cagey and just doesn't play his game because he's so worried about the secret tech that I don't have.
Yeah, no, I think there's more to this than meets the eye.
No, I'm sure. I just thought it was interesting. I've never seen somebody do that.
If the Polish get streamed in a round, watch their games. They come up with some really interesting stuff.
Yep. All right, Brad, give us a list.
All right, so we are going back to Austria, but this time for Mozart. And we're looking at Daniel Snot Paul. Ooh, hold on.
What?
Pawelka.
They have nicknames for this team.
Yeah, Snot.
His Snot. Yeah.
He's playing Trollbloods. The list I want to talk about, so I'll cover that one first, is Berka 2. She has...
He.
Say again?
He.
Whatever. He has a Bomber, a Mauler, the Earthbound Dire Troll, Rock, an Axer, a Bouncer, and then the Rune Bearer with him, with Janissa, Troll Whelps, the Dunion Knot, and then a Min Stone with the Elder. It's paired with Jarl Skuld, running two Bombers, a Mountain King, an Axer, a Trollkin Runebearer, as well as attached to Jarl. Then you have Janissa and the Trollkin Whelps. You have a Dunion Knot, a Min Stone with no attachment, and then a unit of Rune Shapers. Both of those are in the power of Dunia. So, pick that one, because I really like Berka 2. It's before the Northkin theme, which I think is interesting. And you also never see Jarl Skuld, so I have no idea what this list pair does either.
Yeah, I've never seen either of these two casters. Although I think Ryan
played against Berka. But... I've never played against Jarl.
Yeah.
So I've played against both these casters a fair bit, because one of my co-conspirators at Arcane Assist plays Trolls as his primary faction. That's John.
Mm-hmm.
And John's played a lot of Berka too, and he's starting to play a lot of Jarl. And there's some stuff here. So Berka 2 is a countercharge caster, which is a pretty good effect. He's got a lot of pieces in this list that you don't really want to, like, you want to kind of stay cagey around, but then he's got pieces in the list that punish you for staying cagey, like the Bomber, which you want to just run to engage, but you can't because there's pieces that are going to countercharge you. He's got, like, a lot of personal threat projection, which is good. Like, he as a caster is tough to assassinate, and he's really, really strong, and he can do, like, a little bit of work himself. This is not probably a Ghost Fleet drop, but
no.
The thing that's nice about the battle group is even though your caster has like no real fury management available to him, you have you've got +2 threshold from the theme force on all of your beasts, and then your Dunian Knot let you reroll a die on the frenzying, so you can actually like go pretty hot on a lot of stuff, reave like a little bit from each piece. And then just kind of be pretty happy with that. He's got basically like battle charged and then some personal melee presence is all that he has. The only exception to that is he's got a spell called Snow Shroud. And he also has, I think, Frost Hammer as his offensive nuke. Mm-hmm. Neither of which are particularly great on him, which is one of the reasons he got a retool. He does have a weird feat, though. His feat feels a little bit like Kilis' feat. It's that within a 10-inch bubble, models get stealth. And then when an enemy model without immunity cold hits one or more models in his control range with immunity cold, which in his case is his entire battle group because that's his field marshal, with a melee attack, they become stationary after the attack is resolved. So it's a little bit like Mark II Sorcerer II's Bond, or like a couple of other places, the Freezer Animus. It's a little bit like those things. The difference is it's after the attack is resolved. Not at the end of their activation. So you kind of...
They get
of,
to hit you once.
Yeah, exactly. Unless, of course, they're immune to stationary. So you get to play, like, this kind of, like, stay-away-from-me kind of cagey game, and you've got a bomber to still be relevant, because a lot of people will play a list like this that gets to buy itself a turn as a way to get an Alpha Strike. But this list gets to be, like, I've got bombs... in addition, and like Berka also has a bomb and access to the snipe animus from the bomber, so like they can be like, oh, you didn't come in to my threat range because you knew what I was going to do. Well, I'm going to do a little bit of work and buy a turn instead of just buying a turn.
Nice.
Because you don't want them to back off on your feat turn, right? You want them to have a reason to need to come in. But the other thing that's cute about his feat is, and I said this kind of deliberately, models in his feat range get stealth. That doesn't have a friendly clause.
Oh.
So there's this really cute assassination where you're like, I block line of sight with my caster and move up in my brick. And he's like, I give stealth to the models blocking line of sight. The bomber throws bombs at your caster, who he can now see.
That is super cute. I did not see that on the first read through.
Yeah, it's weird. It's cool. I don't know. I like it. It gets a lot more reliable when you've got access to the Dunian knot with Puppet Master, and you can do like kind of cute things because you've got a 10-inch control area. But you've got a couple of like you want to maybe frost hammer something, or you want to like do work, but you've got reposition, so you can like kind of change where that feat is affecting pieces. So I like it. I think he's a neat caster. I think he's got some cool tools. I don't.
Can you tell me what the Jarl list does? Because I'm not familiar with Jarl.
Real quick, if I could just interject about the Borka, the thing I thought about was in our northern area, we've got a Fianna 2 player that's tearing things up. And so instantly all the Kador players went for Sorsha 1. And so Borka 2 is immune cold, makes his battle group immune cold.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's some kind of, meta play in there.
Yeah, there probably is. Additionally, like, if you want tools against a caster whose entire army is immune to knockdown, but they're going to tech defense against you, you also are a caster who's got access to tools that make things stationary, like the Frost Hammer and those kind of things. I think that's interesting, and obviously he's got great game into things like Vale gets 2 less spells in our assassination run against him. And he's got naturally high stats. Jarl is neat. He's a gunmage troll, which is weird already. But he's got 2 POW 12 guns, and then he's got bombers. So they can be range 16 POW 12, and they're magical. And then he's a magic bullet caster. So one of the best things to do with him is just to be a caster who can be like, I've got magic bullet on myself. I'm going to just like magic bullet a couple of times and just do a bunch of POW 12s in relevant spots. You can also magic bullet the bombers and have them like throw their bombs at things, then magic bullet. So you can get like a bunch of magic bullet damage rolls in on a caster or in on kind of deep digging support pieces. He's a quicken caster, so he can say like, this bomber is suddenly speed 9 and then throwing bombs at you. Kind of that threat range.
I bet you didn't.
Because it gets rushed by the Axer, gets quickened by Jarl, and then just like goes really, really far. Having walked 9, it's now like I switch to my Animus, have Snipe, and now I throw bombs at you.
Or you do the same thing to the Mountain King. Assaults and then kill shots.
Yep, absolutely. The Mountain King can put 2 really, really respectable sprays in there. You can also, he has, what's it called? They changed the name. It's, Weld Secrets.
Yep.
Weld Secrets gives Hunter and Pathfinder. The Pathfinder part's not spectacularly relevant, but you just be like, Jarl ignores cover like a ghost pirate, or this bomber doesn't have cover, so you're like, I'm on in a trench, I should be fine. And he's just like, you're not fine, you're dead.
Pew, pew, pew.
Which is pretty cool. The Rune Shapers have access to Knockdown, which is pretty decent. It's a crit effect on them, but you've got the Dunian Knot, so you can sort of fish for those crits. So you've got like a lot of tools there that can just sort of rip pieces off the table really aggressively, and a lot of guns that make that assassination really possible. His feat is a Cloud Wall. It's D3 plus 3 AoE 4 cloud effects.
They're Veil of Mists, right?
They're not the same as Veil of Mists. They're the same size as Veil of Mists. But they don't block that, like Veil of Mist, they don't block friendly Mama line of sights, but they don't, the restrictions are slightly different. They're a little bit like Burning Ash, and they're a little bit like Veil of Mists. Mm-hmm. Someone should look this up because I'm going to get it wrong.
I have it. If you.
I think it gives you -2 to attack rolls if you're in them,
yep.
Your enemy models.
Living.
And I think you can move through other models, but only other friendly models. Is that right?
Yes. And it is only the -2 to living models, which, but yep. Yeah, that's, but yes, yeah. You got it.
So it's not quite Veil of Mists. You can't move through enemy models. But you get kind of a tactician thing, which is cool because he's got tactical supremacy too. So you can do things like lay down your clouds and then use it to like kind of have your models dynamically reposition or fix your order of activation problems if you've got them. I think his feat is basically, it boils down to being a cloud wall. But I think he's a Black Penny caster. So like the tools that a lot of people have against cloud walls is they just run to engage your guns. So he's like, okay, cool, you ran to engage my guns. Gak gak with magic bullet twice, I unjam all my pieces, and then I come in and hit your juicy centers.
Nice.
Sounds hot.
Brad, I have to say, both of your choices were outstanding.
That's actually, I was thinking about picking that one for a second one.
That is a good one. Pete, what do you got?
Okay, I'm going wild card.
Yes.
Cut the brakes.
We're going to scroll all the way to the bottom of the page, and we are looking for USA Red, specifically the alternate, Keith Christensen.
Whoa.
He's also the alternate for USA Blue.
Oh, well, but he has different lists.
Oh, does he? I did not notice that.
Yeah, really? So, yep. Well, so specifically the list I'm interested in is his Coven list in Dark Host. It's got two Death Rippers, a Desecrator, a free Banelord Tartarus, two Max Bane Riders, two Min Bane Warriors with CAs and the Wraith Engine. And then his off list is Denny 2 Ghost Fleet.
Oh, this is so good.
Yeah. Pete sent me that, and I was in love with that fucking Coven list. That is looks so good.
You Americans need to send Keith to the BTC more often, because that man builds savagely good lists and is really good at this game.
Yeah, I mean, I've flirted with Coven before, but it's been more of a traditional Infernal Machines with two Soul Hunters.
Yep.
Yeah, and I've been messing around a lot with Scar 1 with two Max Bane Riders. And this is clearly a chocolate and peanut butter type of situation in which, I was able to down at Nova, they had bins of just used models, and it was 60% off, and I found a Bane Warrior CA, so I can build this list pretty easily.
So Pete, what before we get and jump into Tim, I mean, I'll let you as the cast member, you and Brad, talk about this quickly. As you guys play Crix, so what exactly drew you to this?
Just the ability to deliver everything on their feet turn, I think is going to be key with this type of list, because the Bane Riders, you're gonna throw they're your fast element being speed 7, but you're gonna put one out there fishing for the vengeance move. And then the Bane Warriors, they're only speed 5, so you need to get them up there quickly. You're going to be able to occultate one, if I remember the spell list correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or even the Wraith Engine, if you want to get really froggy.
You don't have to occultate the Wraith Engine. It can just be base-to-base with the ball.
Oh.
Oh, what the fuck?
That's amazing.
No, I'm not okay with this.
Wow. So yeah, I mean,
so it's like the no frills Dark Host list. I'm a fucking sucker to put Derek Wraith in my Dark Host list, so I usually have, less Banes in it. But I mean, you look at it, and it's just a whole list of every model does work. They're going to contribute to the end point of hopefully winning the attrition game, and you're going to have a turn of relative impunity when you feat with the Coven, so you get to do it a second time.
Pro tip: Infernal Machine.
Mm-hmm.
On a Desecrator.
Yeah, it gets murderous, so against another living enemy model, living warrior model, you'll get an additional die to hit, and if you happen to crit with now your 3 dice, you get an additional attack, and those additional attacks can trigger additional attacks.
So, it's pretty good at assassinating, say, casters.
Yeah. And it threatens 11 with Infernal Machine.
Gross. Yeah, this was just a list that I was like, oh my god. And I can't imagine. So, as a WTC team member, you have to sit there and account for all of the teams, and you have to account for the alternates, and clearly this player is not a slouch, and he's bringing a gun to a knife fight.
How do the alternates work? Is it only if one of the players can't make it, or
it's if a player cannot participate?
Oh, that's what I thought. Okay,
is on hand. So we've had a couple of instances where a player either got food poisoning or was really, really sick and couldn't play, or whose flight was delayed. One year, the Canadian team had somebody whose passport was going to expire within 3 months of the time that they were going, so the issuing country wouldn't give them a visa. That did actually get sorted out, but that's the kind of thing that we could expect to see.
Sure.
So, Tim, what do you think about this list?
It's real good, and I'm super glad Keith's an alternate. this list is fantastic. The Denny 2 is a meta choice to be able to beat Ghost Fleet in the mirror, which is great. And Keith's got a ton of time with Denny 2, so he knows how to play her really competently. The Coven list is really, really strong. It's something that I seriously considered myself. Did not go for it because of a couple of ways that our matchups specifically were shaking out, where I'd find myself in a situation where I was like, the tools they've got that answer Ghost Fleet are doing a good job of answering my Coven Dark Host list. I need to switch back to Infernal Machines. But that's neither here nor there. The things that are beautiful about this list are the real like strength and elegance of the pairing, the hard question that it asks, and also the answers that it delivers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was like poetry, that sentence, it was. Tim. Say that it again. Was.
Yeah. Can you... is that written somewhere?
I never like to repeat myself.
Oh, is that true?
No, he only likes to quote himself. Yeah. There's a difference.
Yeah. Is that something you've said before? Maybe, but probably not. I don't know.
No, that just comes off the cuff.
Yeah. All right.
Tim?
And
any
Tim?
Last one from
I'm
yourself?
I'm great at weddings. Let me... I'm going to go back to the well a little bit. I'm going to talk about a pairing on my team's list as well. I'm going to talk about John Fares. John's a really, really incredible player. Fairly local player to me. Real up-and-comer in the Canadian meta. He's been playing Retribution since the faction premiered. Came third at the LCQ at War Machine Weekend last year, and it's a person to keep an eye out on. He's always been a really incredible Ron player, and this is a list that... I've been toying around with about three or four lists. This isn't much of a change to the run list that he's playing, but it is something that I talked to the Mike Ireland about at Nova, and I ran some ideas by John, and he agreed this was a good list. So credit where it's due. This is Mike's list. Concessions that Mike described, it would really like two Manticores to have access to the double covering fire, but Discordia is just so powerful and just gives you so much game into lists that we're going to shoot you. Actually, Mike gave Kat credit for that particular insight, so I'll give her transitory credit.
Nice.
Discordia really does help the matchup and do a lot of work in situations where it's important. You've got some really cute tech where Helios can do his like cool like imprint thing, and the Manticore, you can stagger the activation order where it's like, I activate, I spend a focus to give myself +3 strength, I also gain a focus from the Helios, so you send a fully loaded +3 strength Manticore into something.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people don't know about. That's
you just said it, and I don't know what you said.
So, the Manticore has a rule that says at the beginning of its activation, it can spend a focus to get +3 strength for its activation. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Helios has a rule that says models that activate within 3 inches of it, if it does its broadcast power rule, at the beginning of their activation, gain a focus.
Oh, and you're active player, so you choose what happens first.
Correct.
Alrighty, I get it. I'm back on board.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's the big problem with the Manticore was you're like, why would you ever spend a focus to get +3 strength? The math almost never works out.
Right.
In this situation, it works out.
It's
real good.
Yeah.
Was that bring its power and strength too? If you give it the +2 from the mechanic as well?
I think at comboing it's 23, right? I mean, it's been a while since I put a Manticore on the table because reasons. But
they start at 13. Nope, that's Morose. 13. I clicked the wrong thing. It's 15.
Okay.
So 15 Manticore's up to an 18 up to a 20. What's the power of the weapon?
5. So they go to 25.
25 or just POW 20s.
Yep.
Which is pretty acceptable.
Yep.
Especially when you have Ron TKing things and the Helios can drag things in.
Correct me. They definitely do not have Combo Strike anymore. So it's just multiple POW 20s.
Yeah.
Shame.
Two initial POW 20s. No big deal.
I'm totally fine with POW 20s
on a 14-point jack. Seems good.
Yeah, and for a lot of the game, it has Covering Fire, which is really totally fine. It has the awkwardness of having a rough D3 on a range 12 POW 12 gun, but it's still a magical gun, and it's still a perfectly reasonable gun in a list that wants a couple more kicks. That's basically the reason to put the House Shael Arcanist's unit in the list, and basically that comes at the opportunity cost of a second unit of Battle Mages. The point that Mike was making is that you only want one unit of Battle Mages because two units, you're playing too much for the feat, and they don't do anything outside of the feat turn. And he's pretty much right on that point. They're so good on the feat turn that you definitely want a unit of them, but two units is too much, and I think I probably agree with him. Anyway, I like the run list, but John is really, really comfortable and really, really good with this Kaelissa list. This is Kaelissa in Defenders of Ios. The battle group, which we've iterated on a number of times, has settled on Banshee Hydra, gives you two Arcanists, Fane Knight Scarathisian and a House Guard Thane, both for free. You get a Lys Healer, which you're paying for, and then you have two max units of House Guard Halberdiers with UAs and two Arcantrix Force Generators. Advanced moving House Guard Halberdiers are very strong. You heard it here first. Kaelissa gives you the Banshee, who can walk 5 and shoot 14, thanks to the range multiplication on the Arcantrix Force Generator. It can ignore stealth with her Phantom Hunter. It can ignore line of sight and cover. It can give you a slam gun in relevant places. The Hydra gives you an extra POW 15, range 17 gun. At a walking 6, so a 23-inch threat. She personally has the ability to stationary multiple jacks. Your Arcantrix Force Generators can knock down multiple jacks. She can strip Fury off of things. She can strip Focus off of casters. You basically play the entire game in multiple waves. Those waves are, I'm going to soften things with hard-hitting magical guns in multiples all over the place, deny space, and have control elements in the form of knockdown, rough terrain auras, and stationary on jacks, while you deal with shield-walled halberdiers followed by mini-feated halberdiers followed by you have to clear all of these halberdiers. And then we end up in a late-game situation where he's got a smattering of halberdier models left and then some armor-cracking closers like a fully focused-up Hydra, a Banshee, who's even stronger in the late-game than a second Hydra is, which is the reason for that concession in the list, and multiple Arcantrix Force Generators. Nuances of the list that might not be immediately obvious. Blur is really, really strong on halberdiers, especially against something like Denegro, where she wants to feed on them and venom them a whole bunch of times. Banishing Ward on an Arcantrix Force Generator in the late game makes it very, very difficult to remove from a zone as something that cannot be targeted by spells, cannot be charged, and has armor 22 against shooting. Additionally, Refuge on an Arcantrix Force Generator, they're kind of balanced around running turn one.
Oh, no, stop it.
Yep.
Running turn one, not being in the zone, and then being forced at some point in the next couple of turns to give up their ability to aim, have that crazy powerful Rat 9 and POW 16 on those two shots so that it can walk into the zone. With Refuge, it gets to do both of those
things.
That's
so gross!
Aiming and still walk into the zone. And you can cycle Refuge, so over a couple of turns, they both get into zones without ever giving up any of their damage potential.
And then she feats, and their stealth and can't be charged. Well, they can't be charged anyway, I guess, right?
But yeah, they double feats, can't be charged.
Yeah.
And their stealth. And stealth battle engines are good.
Hot take. Banky is all over the hot takes here, guys.
So, yeah. I think it's I.
Did you say I?
I did. It was kind of ironic. Trying to be edgy.
Said it ironically.
Getting hip with the kids.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, man.
I don't want to, like, summon Beetlejuice here, but we've said his name, like, 14 times. Do you want to talk about Mike's list? Because, like, we said his name, I think, I don't know how many times this whole episode.
Sure.
Too many already.
And then we'll call it a night once we do that.
The Mike Ireland, who's first.
USA Blue.
It's on USA Blue.
He tried to name it USA Ivanka. That was his suggestion.
I believe the line he used was, I'm not necessarily a Trump fan, but he is our president, so I feel like we should do something.
Michael the Michael Ireland is playing Alara 2 in Defenders. He's got a Banshee of Phoenix with 2 free Houseguard Thanes. He's got,
three
units of Halberdiers, all maxed out, all with the UAs and all with 1 Solus Escort, and then 1 Force Generator. He has that pair with Vyros 2 and Forges of War with an Aspis, 4 Griffins, a Helios, and Imperatus, with then 2 Mechanics, a Halshire Artificer, and then a unit of Halshire Articanus with a Solus Escort.
Vyros 2 list is really good, but it's not anything particularly exciting. I think a lot of the innovation that Mike did is in this Alara 2 list, and I think it's a really, really strong list. We talked about it at some length at Nova. Notable exclusions. You do not have a Colossal of any kind. You only have 1 AFG. You do not have a free Scarif Issian. You have nothing kind of flavorful or exciting. You have no extra tech because you're spending a lot of your points on getting the max units of Halberdiers with the UA and the Solus, and all parts of those are important. The UAs are important because you need the repo for the dynamic threat range where you posture really aggressively on the first turn. You need the mini feat for the damage potential that it provides your list. And you actually need the Solus escorts so they can stay 9 inches back from the officer, because Alara 2 has a Mark 2 feat for no reason at all. And she just has to say, oh, one model from each unit is in my feat. They all get to go and be ghostly.
Ridiculous.
And be Balance charged, and just get everywhere they want to be. And they're still ghostly when they repo deeper into your line.
Like, and not that this matters in Mike's list, but it's a Super Mark 2 feat because it's just friendly model units.
Yeah, that's we played in a team tournament, and Vindictus feated and she feated, so there was knights screaming across the table that we then couldn't target with shit.
Well, and Tim, didn't you face us in Masters?
Twice.
Yeah.
Once in Champions, once in Masters. It's a really good list. It's got a lot of tools. The thing is, Mike's point is a lot of lists have the tools necessary to deal with two units of halberdiers, and very, very few of them have the tools necessary to deal with three, and I think he's probably right. Nuance, that's pretty cool. She is a caster who has Scything Touch and Boundless Charge, and early in the game, Mike tends to just upkeep it on one of the halbs so that they can go in and just have that armor cracking against a high-power target. The Phoenix is really important in the list because the Phoenix can have Boundless Charge and Scything Touch arced onto itself. So Alara can hang out with the Banshee and kind of support it and be like, do you need to get Scything Touch and Boundless Charge? Okay, I'm here for you, buddy. And meanwhile, the Phoenix can be totally independent elsewhere, being a gun on the other side of the board in the other zone in recon or what have you. And she can be like, okay, cool. Do you need all that support, pal? Here you go. I'm going to use you as an arc node to give you all those tools. So while the Phoenix is kind of a garbage jack, in my opinion, it fills a really critical role in this list and I think works super well.
Yeah. I've talked to Mike a lot about his list. He's pretty happy. That Alara list is super gross. And like you said, the Virus 2 list, while it's not super innovative anymore, it is pretty, it's pretty good.
It does what it does well.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything else? I know we went long. We talked about a lot of lists. Anything else WGC related worthwhile talking about, Tim?
I'm excited to have beers with folks in Belgium. Reach out if you're going to be in the area early and you're attending the WTC. I'd love to hang out, shoot the shit, chat about, the game probably, but also maybe just whatever. How weird American politics are.
Yeah. You guys should definitely do that. And don't forget to check out Tim's channel, Arcane Assist, and Pete's channel, Not Snakes Gaming.
Thank you.
On Arcane Assist, we roll a lot of snakes, so we can't name ourselves that. It's happened more than I'd like to admit.
Just call it Snakes Gaming.
I think we'd get in trouble with the EPN or whatever.
Yeah, probably. Tim, thanks so much for being on. If I didn't have to be patriotic and root for my own country, you guys are going to be a very close second.
As long as they never play the USA, we can root for
that's
both.
True. That's fair.
Yeah, no.
Well, but eventually.
You only have to make hard decisions when, if we get paired against each other.
Exactly.
And that might not even happen, so.
And so you better really hope that you don't have to play against Michael, the Michael Ireland, because he's coming for you.
He is. And we're one on one, so he's got something to prove.
He does.
I mean, so do I. Like, he should also be afraid of me.
Yeah, he should. But, like, you want to be 2-1 against him. You know how he is. You can't let him be 2-1 against you.
I guarantee he'd dodge that matchup.
He played it afterward. He's like, I think I'm going to dodge this at WGC. And I was like, yeah, I think you're going to try.
Yeah. Tim, it's a pleasure to have you on as always. Good luck over at the WGC. Like I said.
And at whatever convention you're flying out to tomorrow.
Attack X.
I'm going to be helping judge, but I'm hoping to also get some games in and shake the rust off. So
well, good luck winning the convention while you're judging it. Just like do both. It's fine.
I don't know. That probably wouldn't go over well.
I mean, you've done it before, so I feel like it's fine.
Oh.
Isn't that how you won the Sioux, right?
It is. Well, I wasn't judging that day, but yeah. I judged on Friday. And then hung up my judging spurs and put on my playing spurs.
Put on your big boy pants.
Judging is way harder than winning conventions, man, let me tell you.
Oh, is it really, Tim? Is it that much harder?
Yeah. Tim has so many First World War Machine problems, I can't really deal with all of them at once. It's just, it's all, like, guys, I can't run a convention and judge and go to dinner with everybody awesome there and then still win. Oh, wait, no, I just did all of those things.
I was going to say, I went to dinner with a lot of awesome people.
Yeah.
And then company included.
No, also us. I'm adding, you went to dinner with awesome people and then us.
Now you guys were a delight, and I'm looking forward to seeing most, if not all of you, at the Boker Brawl.
Yes, we actually all will be there. Funnily enough, Brad, you dick. Thanks for bringing Banky.
What? You don't want me to come?
No, I want. I want you to come. I do not want you to be on Brad's team with Mike Ireland. I am not looking forward to any of this. This is all going to be terrible.
I told Brad I was in if we could get Mike. That was my.
Yeah, and that's all he needed to hear. Oh, Banky will play if I come. If I'm on the team, okay, sure, I'm in.
I think it's a fair field. I think it's going to be a good day.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And you know, like if we don't win, like that's on us.
Like, well, here's the thing though. Like here's the problem. Like if we win, it's expected, which is fine. If we lose, immediately Brad drug Tim Banky and Mike Ireland down. The backpack was too heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. You brought Tim all the way from Canada to North Jersey for a one-day event to fucking lose for him.
Right. God help me if I lose. I'll be the worst player in the U.S.
I can't even argue with that. That's,
right? It's a lose-lose for me.
Correct.
It is. And the Bocor Brawl has sold out, and that is coming up soon, so that is going to be a blast. I can't wait for that. That's going to be a really awesome day.
Do you know if they're going to have any streaming or recording there?
I do not know the answer to that. Pete, any clue?
I feel like they were working on it.
I will message Seth. We'll have an answer by next cast.
Yeah.
Cool. Maybe yes. I'll bring down a camera or something. See
if- I mean, I could throw up our shitty camera. Yeah.
I could throw up our shitty camera. Ha, huh, two cameras.
All right. Shitty cameras.
Two shitty cameras.
Gentlemen, I need to take off.
Yes. Tim, thanks so much again. Sorry for the difficulties, and good luck, buddy. All right. Everybody else decided to stop their audio, and Tim had to go. So for Pete, Ryan, Brad, myself, and Tim, thanks for listening.